Welcome to Poet Runner, the podcast where we talk about poetry and running. I have my co-host, Richard Modiano, who will announce our guest now. Howdy.
Yes, our poet for today is Edward Vidore, who is also editor, publisher of Flower Song Press. And before we talk about your poetry, Edward, I have reviewed, I think, four or five Flower Song Press books on our show, and they were all one of the what struck me is that they were beautifully produced books, nicely designed, and the poets that you have selected were all terrific. The ones that I read were by Matt Cedillo, Iris de Anda, Brianna Munoz, and we just had her on last week, Rafael.
Gina Doran.
Yeah.
Gina.
And they will all be reading for us or have read for us in our monthly series at Avenue 50 Gallery. So how did you get started with Flower Song Press?
Well, it's a pretty cool story. I was published when it was called Flower Song Books by David Bowles. He was the founder of the press. And we had a conversation after he published me, maybe a while down the line, and I asked him, hey, I was curious about who the next poet was going to be published through the press. You know, just want to know who my, you know, sister or brother on the imprint were going to be, and are you going to publish next? And at the time, he was just blowing up in the YA genre and the children's books and stuff, and he was winning awards, and that along with being a full-time, you know, professor at the university. So he was like super busy. So he told me, he goes, I don't think I'm going to publish anyone soon or at all. I'm just too busy. And I kind of, you know, felt, no, man, this can't be, you know, I don't want it to end. You know, I don't want the press to just, you know, close shop, you know, especially because, you know, you want to be with a press that's going to continue putting work out there. And I was, you know, really excited about, you know, the press focusing on underrepresented voices, especially along the borderland. And so I said, no, man, you know, let's keep it going. And he told me just flat out, he goes, why don't you do it? You know, he goes, you can do it. He goes, I'll transfer everything to you, you know, the catalog, and you, you know, get going with it. And I said, yeah, right away, not knowing what was in store, you know, or how it even worked, you know. And so I said, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I was like, yeah. I was like, I know a lot of poets that I'd love to see published, and I was like, yeah, I'll do it, not knowing, you know. And then so the transfer came through and published some poets along the border. Daniel Garcia Ordaz, he put out a collection called Sensontle, Mockingbird. And he was my first publisher, too. He was my second publisher. He's got a press down here called El Sarape Press. And so published him, and then published Odilia Galvan Rodriguez. At the time, was living in Los Angeles, up north in California, and The Color of Light. We put that book together, and so, you know, it was exciting because I went from poet, author to publisher, and I was still writing, you know, still, you know, doing my thing, but I was more excited, I think, in being a publisher and getting other people published than worrying about myself getting published. And so that's how it went. And then I was working closely with his daughter, with David Bowles' daughter, Nicole, and she brought a new logo into place. And then we changed it from Flower Song Books to Flower Song Press, and just did a few, you know, changes, and got the website going, and just started working, you know, started asking for manuscripts. You know, I started doing some headhunting, you know, looking for the poets that I wanted to see published. And, you know, it started off, you know, where, you know, it's just asking around, stuff like that. And now it's at the point where, you know, I've got, you know, over 100 manuscripts in the queue to go over. And then was, you know, being approached by established writers, you know, that want it, that believed in what I was doing and appreciated it. And I was, I've always been a groupie of an author, of a poet. I just love the work. I love that what they're doing, their vulnerability, their truth. And so I was like, man, this is going to be amazing. And I've always, I knew Matt Cedillo, I knew David Romero through the, you know, socials and stuff like that, and just checked out their YouTube videos and everything like that. And, you know, got Matt Cedillo published, and he became a force, you know, out there in the West Coast. And he's also, you know, looking out for talent and writers and stuff like that. And the great thing is not necessarily doing the same thing he does, you know, and that's the goal, you know, really to look for different voices and try not to get, try to get something fresh, you know? And, so yeah, like he's out there on the West Coast and doing the work and it's just been great. It's been a great, you know, team effort and stuff like that.
Well,
and there's a lot of other you know, people in place that have made it possible as well, you know, with the typesetters and the cover designers and the editorial board of readers. You know, I've got a great team of people that I trust and then that trust me and that believe in what we're doing. And it's been quite a journey.
Well, your catalog is excellent. It's very it's diverse, and everything that I've read that has come from your press has been outstanding. So, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And the books are beautifully designed too.
Yeah, you know, I give a lot of freedom to the authors, you know, to either come up with a cover design or tell me what they're looking for, and it's always, you know, it's always for them to be happy with what it looks like. Ultimately, it's their book. You know, they're holding it. They're reading from it. So it's like, what do you want? You know, this is what I have. This is what I can come up with. And there's been times where, hey, here's a cover, and they're like, I want to go with mine. And I'm like, perfect. Whatever you're happy with, you know.
Well, that's good. I mean, that the poets that I talked to have told me that you guys at Flower Song Press pay attention to what they want, very attentive, sensitive, and everybody that I've talked to that you've published has been thrilled with the books that you've turned out for them. So, I hope you have a very long, long history. I mean, when you were telling me about your initial involvement and how you eventually took it over, of course, I couldn't help but think of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who was a poet and then editor and publisher at City Lights Books.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's kind of, you know, I'm trying to model myself with Lawrence. It's funny you brought that up. A friend of mine said, you know, you can be the Latinx Ferlinghetti, and I was like, get out of here. You know, but honestly, I was like, yeah, I want to do that. That's the goal. And also after Luis Rodriguez, you know, having his own press,
oh, yes,
and he's
sure.
An author, and he's got a
yep.
You know, cultural arts center. That's the long-term goal, you know, to have a place where, you know, we can do many things and work with many mediums. And also, you know, something that's, you know, has longevity, like, you know, like City Lights.
Yeah. So if I may ask a few biographical information, in the course of reading your book, I see that you were in Los Angeles at one time. Where are you from, actually?
I was born and raised in Boyle Heights, just just over the First Street Bridge there in East L.A. And I lived there till I was about 26, I want to say. I moved to Texas in 2000 and been here now almost around close to the same time I spent in Los Angeles. But yeah, I was born and raised in Los Angeles and moved to Texas back in 2000.
So you've been there 22 years now.
Yeah. February was 22 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the contrast between Boyle Heights and where do you live? What part of Texas do you live in now?
I live down here in McAllen, which is not too far from the border to Mexico. And
yeah,
well, you know, it's you know, it's different. When I first moved out 20 years ago, it was a culture shock. You know, everything, there was not a lot of sprawl. There was not a lot of, you know, I think we have one or two tall buildings here compared to Los Angeles. The life seemed to be a little slower. You know, if you drive an hour, you're getting far. You're not stuck, you know. I think what attracted me to the border was that it's very chill. According, you know, it's not what people think of a border town, that it's dangerous and this and that. No, it's pretty calm, you know. Most of the time, you know, I leave the car door open. You know, I think I'll start locking it now that I said it. But, I don't really worry about much, you know, here. Everything's chill. You know, get to have a couple of meals with the family a day sometimes, because in Los Angeles, you know, you're either stuck in traffic or you're working forever, and it just, there's just so much rushing, you know, up and down. And on my days off, I was trying to take all care of the things, the laundry and running errands and stuff like that. And here, you know, the days off, I can actually not leave the house. I can relax. And you know, I live eight minutes from work, so it's pretty,
oh, that's nice.
It's pretty cool.
That's nice. So turning to your poetry, I believe this is your fifth book. Is that correct?
Or my eighth.
Eighth, pardon me, eighth. Okay, I couldn't read my own handwriting. Couldn't see that five and eight. Your eighth book. And the book is Cry, Howl, and it is published by Prickly Pear Publishing. What struck me about the poems in this book was the range of subjects that you treat, which go from poems of private epiphany and private travail to things of public concern, incidents that are contemporary, the larger world. And the other thing that I like about your poetry is that it is accessible. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Charles Harper Webb, who was the sort of founder or one of the founders of what is called stand-up poetry, which is basically poetry that is for the people. People can relate to this poetry. You don't have to climb over a Chinese wall of obscurity to find out what the poet is trying to say. And I think that certainly that kind of poetry has its place, but it is it's not for everybody. And the poetry that I personally like is a poetry that speaks to as many people as are out there, something that draws people in. And we know that in the United States, in contrast to Central America, for example, poetry is something that is obscure. It's out, you know, intimidating in some way. And that's unfortunate. And I mentioned that in Central America when I was the director of Beyond Baroque, we had a translator of Central American poetry who'd been to Nicaragua and told me that when they had poetry readings there, they could fill the soccer stadium, and that it was a popular art form, not a an elevated off-to-the-side art form as it is in the U.S. And what I see in your poetry is this ability to reach and talk to other people through your own sensibility and to bring your way of seeing the world and experiencing the world to other people. And that, I think, is a great, great strength of a poet. And, for example, I wonder if you would mind reading Robbed at Knife Point.
Not a problem. And you know, I want to write so that those people that you know, didn't finish high school can relate, you know, and even those that are in academia can relate, because I'm self-taught, you know. I didn't go to college, and so my thing was I read a lot, and I learned a lot through reading and just kind of, you know, created what I do now through that. But I do write for that, you know, friend that lives in the project still, so that they can relate and say, man, I get that. I like that. Instead of, what the hell did he just say?
Yeah.
So here's Robbed at Knife Point. The bus ride was bumpy and too fast. It was definitely a weekday. I always walked to the back of the bus, window seat facing the right side, where I could see the people get on and off. I could see the gutters, the businesses opening up early, the drama of the day unfolding, lovers holding hands, stray dogs panting and rummaging through trash, the homelessness of my city extending their hands. My view was of the grind, la lucha. I carried a backpack with books, cassette tapes, and markers for tagging, even though I sucked at it and had given up on it several years back. It was a constant for me. That day I jumped on the bus on 7th and Spring. I remember I was listening to some Roger and Zap. I was a bit tired from the double shift I worked the day before. Between songs and reading from Rodriguez's Always Running, I heard voices, grunts, and the sound of people pushing against each other as the bus filled up. I scooted my body and leaned my head on the graffiti-marked window, then dozed off. My eyes opened up a bit later to see a short, long-haired kid, white T-shirt and Dickies pants, Nike shoes, damn cholo. I dressed the same in my barrio. He kept looking around, hands in pockets, as if he were cold. The bus came to a stop near MacArthur Park. Want to see a melting pot? If you didn't get shot, stabbed, or drowned in the lake there, you were fortunate. That day, I got robbed at knife point. This is what I remember. The bus stopped, people were getting on and off, and this kid in his teens pulled out a knife and stuck it to my neck with one hand while he took my watch and backpack with the other. Jumped off the bus and walked away. The bus driver never saw it, and no one made a commotion. I looked at him run away with my bag. Inside, the pages of Ellison and Villaseñor became instant orphans. The bus slowly pulled away. I stared at the lake. A lone swan sat on its murky waters. I hadn't seen a swan so beautiful as that one, and haven't since.
Well, that final stanza is beautiful, I think, the poem itself is, it's both personal and it is something that we live with day in and day out. People who,
yeah.
I mean, I'm a bus rider, and talking about your background, you know, my parents were first generation, and my grandparents were from the old country. They barely spoke English. And my father's formal education ended at the 7th grade. My mother was a high school graduate. And between them, they spoke 4 languages. So, and they were autodidacts. They were self-taught people, always learning. So this is something that I really appreciate very much about this work. And that poem was so concise, so clear, and so gripping from beginning to end. That is the kind of poetry, I think, that really speaks to a lot of people, really speaks to a lot of people. And something that has another poem of yours that I really like that has a specific political quality to it is Through the Fence for All Immigrants.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you would let us hear that one.
Through the Fence for All Immigrants. I offer these medicine poems. I gather this sage for you poems. Teach me to pray the rosary poems. Let's face the 4 directions together poems. In lak etch, tu eres mi otro yo poems. Sweat together poems. Eres mi yemaya poems. Floricanto poems. Don't drown in the river poems. Altar for our ancestor poems. Sobadora curandera poems. Sana sana colita de rana poems. drumbeat poems, conch shell poems, cumbia poems, y salsa poems, hold my hand through the fence poems, here's some food for your journey poems, la bestia at high speeds poems, you are my kindred poems, bring me your dreamer poems, your F this border wall poems, don't worry about the orange guy poems, don't speak his name poems, your existence is medicine poems, help me uncelebrate Cinco de Mayo poems, Ya Basta poems, Grito poems, Indigenous Wisdom poems, Palo Santo poems, You Were Here First poems, Decolonize Your Soul poems, Code Switch poems, You Belong poems, No More War poems, Son Jarocho poems de Resistencia, Corrido poems, Gonzafos poems, Flying Chancla poems. Share this meal with me poems. Here, drink some water poems. Let me die your death poems. One day at a time poems. Café con leche poems. Pan dulce poems. Pupusa poems. Guayaba poems. Manguitos con alguaste poems. Raspa poems. Espiropapa poems. Platanitos poems. La pulga poems. Molcajete poems. Pocho poems. Salvi poems. East LA poems. Valley poems. Gather in this embrace poems. Crying poems. We're waiting for you on this side, poems. We have hot coffee and tamales poems. Recipe poems. Share my rebozo poems. Come, fall in love poems. You are worth more than any labor you do, poems. You are him, her, they poem. They, them poems. Welcome home poems. Get some rest poems. Tomorrow we'll plan the future poems. I love you poems. Take with you these love poems. You are not illegal poems. We'll protect your women and children poems. You are not an alien poems. This is actually your land poems. You deserve so much more poems. Hide behind me poems. You are not merchandise to be locked up poems. Warsan Shire home poems. Como la flor poems. Tanto amor poems. La Llorona poems. El Otero poems. Be my chola poems. Pan de polvo poems. Orale vato poems. Slow dance poems. Padrino de DJ poems. Kiss me when I'm asleep poems. Deep tongue poems. Wildflower poems. River's edge poems. Chicharra poems. First and last breath poems. Stay speaking Spanish. It is poetry.
That's beautiful. And the music for this, the music in this poem is wonderful, I thought. It was, you know, there was sort of a taxonomy of poetry. I Ezra Pound came up with it. He said it in Greek. I don't know the Greek, so I will say it in English. He said that a poem is working completely when you have the ideas and the images and the music. So the images embody the ideas, and the music carries the ideas. And I think we have all three of those things working in this poem. So it was a beautiful, lovely poem, and very meaningful and powerful, too. And what I like, another thing that I like about this is, it is, I like all of the Spanish in it. That is one thing that adds to the music to it, that brings the music into it. Now, I have some Spanish. My father spoke Spanish fluently. So, I mean, even if you were not a Spanish speaker and know not a word of it, you can still get the sense of this poem, absolutely. So it was, I think it was a beautiful poem, very beautiful poem.
Thank you. You know, I there's only a few poems that I read, you know, from my collections that get me really choked up and teary-eyed after I read it or even during. And this is one of them, and there's been a few that I've written for my dad, and there's one that I wrote about my great-grandmother who committed suicide, that even though I didn't know her, when I read it, it just brings this element of feelings for you know, what's there and what it's about. And it, you know, this poem I wrote years ago, you know, and it's relevant, you know. It hasn't lost its meaning, you know, and unlike the poems that I've written about the pandemic, you know, those one day will become one of those where, oh, when the pandemic was going on. But there's some that are here that could have been written you know, in the 70s and in the 80s when people were being, you know, taken away in Central America and even South America, and it speaks to them as well.
Yeah, that's strong. It's one of the poems that is for all for the ages, as they put it. It will always be relevant because these problems will always be with us. Let's face it. Let's be honest. The prejudice, the difficulties, the obstacles that immigrants have to surmount will never go away, and this poem will always be relevant.
Yeah.
Always be relevant.
Yeah. Sadly.
And I think, are we running out of time, Raphael?
We got exactly 5 minutes.
Okay, well then let's close with Bread and Circuses. Bread and Circuses, another poem that I really liked.
Okay. I wondered about this poem if it was even going to have that kind of a, you know, liking, but here it is. Bread and Circuses. When you start paying attention, you notice you're sitting anchored by what's on the eye. There are car chases, explosions, missing children, epidemics, drug busts, Hollywood romances, food shows, big pharma, royal theater, politicians selling the usual, morning news, primetime news, evening news, all disappointment. No more eating out. Food is delivered from your favorite restaurant. Wings, burgers, sushi, tacos, salads, ice cream, even coffee and donuts. Alcohol is coming soon. Wait, it's already here. Televisions are over 80 inches with surround sound. No need to go to the movie theater. Everything you need is at home. No malls to leave home for either. The internet delivers. Exercise? Without moving a few feet in front of the tube as you lose weight. Commercials telling you you may have a condition. Take a pill that may cause a side effect. Are you the ringleader or the clown? When did we allow for tragedy and violence as entertainment into our lives?
That's another hard-hitting poem. We are running out of time. I would talk about it more, but I love the book Cry Howl Poems by Edward Vidore, published by Prickly Pear Publishing. Order it directly from the publisher, your independent bookstore, and as a last resort, go to Amazon.
Amazon.
I say Amazon is the last resort because we do want to go right, and we want to support the small presses that put these books out more than anything.
Yeah.
So, right, and thank you for your time,
your...
Edward. I enjoyed our conversation, and
wait up. Keep
Flower Song Press going forever.
Wait, promotion.
That's
do you have
plan.
Any poets
much.
Reading around town? Do you have any events coming up
okay.
soon in LA or anywhere else? Do you have any poets that are that need to be promoted from your press?
If you go to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and on Flower Song. On our Flower Song Press page on Facebook, and I usually post up what the authors are sharing with me of what they're doing, and try to keep up to date with that. And you can also check out our Flower Song Press website. But yeah, look us up on the socials, and you'll see what's coming up.
Great, thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate you.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Well, Rachel, we got a little bit of time before the next guest comes in, because it's looking like, we got about 2 minutes before he comes on. Let's see, the next Insatiable Beast, we have Gina Duran from Flower Song Press. That'll be July 10th at Avenue 50. We also have A.K.
She's
Tony.
She's reading with Yago Kura and A.K.
Tony,
correct?
And Linda Ravenswood.
Anybody else? And
Linda Ravenswood.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've talked to Gina and Linda on the show.
Yep. And no, those have been good interviews. I mean, I know when not to talk. You did. No, today's interview was great. I liked hearing his poetry, and I like, you know, learning more about, you know, Flower Song and how it began.
Yeah. Well, it's a great press. It's a great press. I mean, it's in good hands.
Yep. It's nice knowing there's other communities that, you know, they're springing up for poetry, you know, and in the beginning, because we have Bob Holman in New York. We have Kathy and Peter in New York, too. And, you know,
yeah,
there's a bunch
we
of
should, we should have
there's
them
a bunch
on
of people
with,
that...
Well, when the new Maintenant comes out, we should have Kathy and Peter on to talk about it.
No, I agree. I think when is the new one coming out?
It's supposed to be published in July at some point.
Cool. And do you know anybody who's in it? Or the usual people?
Well, I believe the usual people. Doug Knott is in it. I'm in it. I think Nika Ray is in it. A few others. Puma Pearl. Mark Olmsted.
This is about the 15th or 17th issue.
This is number 16. Number 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember when it was just like 4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think they did their first L.A. reading with number 9, with the 9th one.
Yeah, I remember that.
Years.
I remember.
Yeah, it was 7 years
ago. I remember. I don't think I was here for it, but I remember getting published in a couple of them. No, I like what I like about Kathy and Peter is how they've sprung up and they've always, you know, been doing something and being busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Where is my runner? Oh, man. Oh, there he is. Now, I'll be letting you go because we have no reviews today, and I'll be talking
all
to
right.
the runner now. All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. And now we have Justin. How do you pronounce your last name? Because I know I'm going to destroy it.
McCants. Justin McCants.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but, you know, for some reason I knew it. I just figured I might say it wrong because I usually have a habit of destroying guest names.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Let's see. Are you training for anything? Is there anything you set your goals for, or are you just running to run?
Said, am I running for anything?
Mm-hmm. A goal, or are you training, or are you just running for the fun of it?
Really, I'm running a little bit of both. You know, I like to set intentions before each run, but I'm not running for the most part. I'm not running for times or distance. So I'm running for clarity. You know, I'm running for me. Like that running is like a real zen moment for me. So I'm trying to achieve that every run.
Well, I get the whole Zen thing because, I mean, yeah, in the 5th or 6th mile, I get very, you know, into my own thoughts and get lost and drift. I do that a lot.
Yeah,
and that's what
too.
Running for
especially
me is.
What was it?
No, I said that's what running for me is basically. I mean, it's not the miles or the distance. I mean, for me, it's actually endurance too, but it's more about just getting it done.
Getting it done, yeah. The feeling of accomplishment afterwards, the common feeling that I have afterwards, it just keeps going. It's a snowball effect. And I love that, especially like for me, like the running and the repetition. Like I like to keep the same pace, you know, for as long as I can. And that's almost like that helps me get in that meditative trance, you know. I'm not even thinking about running. I'm just in my head, you know, relaxed. And that's the main thing on my runs that I've been trying to just achieve is just that constant rhythm.
I try to keep to like 9 to 10 minutes a mile. That's what my thing is, right? I'm just trying to keep it there. I would love to do 7 or 8 minutes, but not getting there yet. But time, still got time.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to get to, you know, 6-minute, 7-minute miles, you know, on a 10-20 mile race too. That'd be ideal. Right now, I think my average pace time is like in the high 9 minute. You know, just like a, not necessarily like a running or a training speed, but like my just my go to kind of like jog rhythm, jog slash run rhythm would be around, yeah, I'd say 10-9 minutes as well.
Well, I like guy I talked to yesterday. He's ran 503 marathons. He's 75, and he takes him 5 hours to do a marathon. But it's like he's 75 and still doing.
Yeah,
marathons.
That's incredible. 75. See, that's where it's like, you know, it's a mental game.
Well, that's what he said. It was about your body can do a lot of things. It's your mind and your body, and they both got to be focused. And you got to listen to your body too. If you don't listen to your body and you do too much, you end up injuring yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong about that. The injury. I've got a long list of those. So. I've stopped listening to music as well. Sometimes I'll listen to music on my runs, but I try to listen to my body more. I feel like when I'm listening to music, I kind of push myself too far sometimes.
Huh. I the music's on, but I'm not paying attention to it anymore. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I don't notice the music so much.
And then for me, the BPM's kind of, you know, I'm trying to achieve that constant, steady BPM. And just depending on the music that I'm listening to, my body just inherently wants to sync to that rhythm sometimes. And it kind of, you know, just influx my pace throughout my run. So now, you know, I like to listen to, you know, some podcasts. I've got my little Apple Watch, throw my AirPods onto it, leave my phone at home. Yeah. And I'll just listen to a little podcast or a book or something like that. And I think that really helps me kind of just get more in my head and not think about the running and all that as well.
Huh. I the only time I do that is when I do the stair climb at like 15 minutes. I just put some TV show on and it distracts me from how many minutes I'm actually, you know, climbing the Stairmaster.
But yeah, the Stairmaster,
I haven't tried the podcast
that'll slow down time.
I like the Stairmaster. It's fun. I like the Stairmaster. It's fun.
The Stairmaster is... Nah, hey, that's a you thing, I think. The Stairmaster for me just immediately puts that burn on, you know? I'm like, woo, my thigh, my quad.
No, that's what I like about it. I mean, right now I'm training for an ultra, so for me, I just re-added the Stairmaster 15 minutes, level 20. I'm going to be doing that every day till I run the ultra on August 20th, so I can build up my endurance.
Yeah, that's not bad, you know? That's not bad. I know some people who do the Stairmasters, they'll throw some weights on their ankles and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know about the weights on ankles thing. That just, I heard bad things about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never trained like that before. But, yeah, I've seen people do it with the weights on their ankles, or they'll have the vest on. And you could slide the plates inside.
Yep.
That's one too. I was running Canyon yesterday, and there's a man running with just like these heavy metal chains up and down the mountain.
Yep.
And I was like, damn, that's next level right there.
Well, I saw some dude with like, I think 2 to 3 inch jump, you know, rope. And I go, what is that? It's my jump rope. I'm like, really? It looked like
that's
super
crazy.
Heavy. I was amazed. I'm like, damn, that guy definitely is taking that whole jump rope thing to a different level, because that just looks heavy.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. But hey, jump roping's really good for you too, though, for that endurance and all that.
I got jump rope, but I just haven't been able to jump right. So, I mean,
yeah,
legs are heavy or something. I've tried jump. I mean, I read somewhere that it's good for the running, so I tried it, but still haven't been able to do it right. I mean, there's a bunch of things I want to do for my legs. I've started weight training my legs again for strength. I avoid that like 2 weeks before a marathon. But I got about a month before the next marathon, so I'm weight training again with the legs just to build in the muscle.
Lately, I've just been trying to, like, I still run every day, but I want my body to be in shock. I don't want it to, you know, get used to doing the same exercises every day. So I've been trying to incorporate, like, cycling. I've got a road bike, and I've been trying to, like, cycle, get that leg workout in. And, like, surprisingly, it's been really helpful, you know, because, you know, my body's like, it's thinking we're going to go on another 10-mile run, but I'm actually cycling. Yeah. And I can just feel like different muscle groups in my body working that typically aren't working every day. So that's,
well, see, I mean,
that's
I,
a little plus.
Hmm? That's the whole thing about listening to what your body, but see, this works for your body. So that's perfect for you, but somebody
yeah.
else it might not work for, but you found what works for your body. So you found a way to train that works for you.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah, everybody's different, you know. Like, I like some people running. Like, for me, I've been trying to lose weight a little bit, like cut down on my body fat percentage. And for me, like, I run a lot, but walking actually helps me lose weight more. And I would have never thought about that, you know what I'm saying?
No, but it's true.
Walking,
you lose more weight.
Yeah.
For some reason, walking, you lose more weight, which I don't quite understand, but people say, you know, the more you walk, the more weight you lose. And, you know, I'm running 10 miles and doing all the stuff on the stair climb, and the walking will probably just do it as quick, which is kind of,
yeah,
you know, not what you want to hear.
What was that?
Yeah, it's not what you want to hear, that, you know, all the effort you're doing and all you have to do is take a walk. You know, it's like, dang.
Oh, yeah. It kind of pissed me off. I'm like, wait a second. But I honestly... There's two things that I hate doing. One is ab workouts, and two is walking. I just hate walking. It takes too long. When I walk to the store, it's just like all I'm thinking about is like being ready. I'll ride things. I'll ride a bike. I'll run to the store. I'll ride my skateboard. I got a little e-scooter. But like walking for me is just – it's something I got to get over too. I just got to like, I guess, slow down.
Well, the weird thing to me about walking is I'd rather run in the heat than walk in it. I'd rather run in the rain than walk in it.
Yeah, like, let's
but
get it. Even if
me.
I'm going, I'd still rather run. I feel like, I don't know, just the walking makes it more miserable for me. It's just like, I get in this mindset that, like, this is taking forever. Like,
well, yeah.
I just want to be home, thinking about things that I'd rather be doing. But when I'm running, I'm not even thinking about running. You know, I'm chilling. I'm in my comfort zone right there.
You know, you get, well, there is the, you know, the endorphin high that you hit after a couple miles. Soon, you know, you just, once you feel that high, you just keep going. And most times you can keep going a lot. You know, it's amazing how far you can go.
The first time I ever hit 15 miles on a single run, that runner's high was ridiculous. Like, came home, it's like, Mom, I just ran 15 miles. She was like, how are you, like, why are you so happy? Like, I'd be dead. And I was like, man, I literally felt like I could, like, float, you know? It was like a full euphoric. I felt like I took drugs. I was on mushrooms or something, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a... Well, they equated the same. I mean, it's like drugs. Heroin hits your endorphin levels. But running is a natural way to hit your endorphin levels without, you know, fucking yourself up. So, you know, it's healthier.
Yeah. I don't even know, like, the science behind runner's high, but it's something that definitely keeps me going. I get a runner's high before I run, too. I don't know if that's a thing, but, like, or it could just be excitement. But, like, I genuinely am, like, happy and, like, in a good mood when I'm, like, you know, putting my shoes on and all of this, and then, like, it's a little bit more increased after my run. If I, you know, if I'm sticking to my rhythms and it was a good run and all of that, then, yeah, then it's even stronger. But, yeah, I get runner's high before my run.
That's funny because sometimes before I run, I don't even want to run. I mean, it's like today I didn't want to run, but after the run's done, I feel good. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, crap, I don't want to do this today. But if I don't do this today and I stop doing it, then it's going to be another day that I stop doing it. And it's like, I can't stop because I don't want to get into that whole thing where I stop and I don't do it anymore. You know?
Yeah, no, you're right. I kind of feel that, but, like, I guess the excitement, the overwhelming excitement comes from, like, me knowing that I don't want to do it, but knowing that I can do it and I'm about to anyway. And, like, that progression, that mindset kind of just gets me going. I'm like, yeah, like, it feels like I'm approaching, like, beast mode. You know, I'm like, man, I really don't want to do this, but I'm about to get it anyway. I'm about to go hard. And then, like, you know, a couple minutes later, I'm like, all right, yeah, like, I'm pumped for this run now. I done tricked my brain into, like, wanting to feel this pain that I'm about to feel, you know?
And sometimes, I mean, I'll go to Gold's Glendale because I have a really horrible landlord who hasn't fixed my shower, so I have to run to the Gold's Gym in Wilcox to take a shower. So, you know, I basically set myself up so I got to finish the run. You know.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah, I guess there's two sides that you can look at that. I've been going, the one that you said Glendale? Glendale's
like,
pretty
you know,
far.
Brandon Broadway. Brandon Broadway. It's like a 10-mile run.
Oh, okay.
It's actually,
I was going to say,
pretty
this
easy, actually.
One right in Hollywood. The one on, what's it off of? Off of Cole Ave in Santa Monica?
Yeah, that's the one I go to. That's my usual gym.
Oh,
it's okay. My everyday gym. But sometimes I'll go to Venice Gold's just so I can run, you know, the beach. Just, you know, change of pace so you don't get bored with the run. I think the thing with the running is you need different places to run so you don't get, you know, bored.
No, you're right about that. Sometimes I do the same trail over and over again, too. It's like I'm not pushing myself as hard because I know where all the turns are and all of this. But I feel like when I don't know where I'm going, it's just like a more free feeling emotionally. And I'm like, I don't know,
oh, yeah.
I have better runs, different mindset. I'm like, whoa, this is cool, you know. But one thing I love about California, man, is these views. Like, coming from, I came from South Carolina, it's pretty flat out there, you know. I mean, we might run around the lake or something like that, or, you know, we had trails and stuff, but we didn't have mountainous trails, you know. So, like, running up here and just being able to see all of L.A., I mean, it's going to take a while for me to get tired of that. Of the same trails out here. But I do feel you on that. I do feel the need to switch it up sometimes.
Well, no, it's a matter for your, I don't know, for me, I've actually took the bus to South Central because I used to live in 93rd and Figueroa and it was miserable. And the whole thing for me was like, you know, just to feel where I used to live to get past it. So I ran all the way from 93rd and Fig to Vin Scully and Sunset. You know,
damn.
So that was like a 10-mile run. But it was like, it's kind of interesting because it's kind of like, you know, it's a different neighborhood and the people there have different mindsets. So when it was just wild to me to like run through it because it was just like running through my bad time.
Yeah, I need to find some new trails, honestly. I've just been doing the running one over and over again. But I need something a little bit longer so I don't have to do as many loops.
Oh, yeah, go up the Hollywood Trail, then go up, then get off on the street, go towards the observatory and come out, you know, and then you could actually run to the, run down the street to Travel Town and come out to LA Zoo. That's what I used to do.
Okay, yeah, maybe I need to do that because I don't think you can get to the Hollywood Trail from running, so I just got to go straight to the Hollywood Trail.
You go up Bronson, go straight up, and then boom, you're there. Then you just go up to the Hollywood. I mean, you can go up to the Hollywood side, backtrack, then come out and then be on the street, and then you run up a little bit, and then there's a side where you can go up some dirt road to the observatory. I mean, I found it. You know, I just decided to go. I go exploring sometimes, not knowing where the hell I'm going, just to find out where it goes. And that usually works.
Fair enough, yeah.
You know, and sometimes you get lost. I actually got lost in Beverly Hills. I got lost in Beverly Hills trying to find my way around. My friend of mine goes, how can you get lost in Beverly Hills? I go, well, my GPS wasn't working, and I took the wrong street, and these rich people are looking at me kind of funny.
Yeah, they will look at you funny, but, hey, that's not a bad spot to get lost in, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know. Yeah, but it was, you know, it's just It's interesting, a different, you know, if you really travel around, you see a lot of the city when you're running, when you get to know a lot of spaces you don't know that you never known by just exploring it.
Yeah, this city's not too big. I could explore this for my whole life and find something new out there every day.
So are you planning on doing – go ahead.
Thinking about running to Santa Monica. Have you ever done that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I've gone down to Santa Monica to the beach and ran all the way to Malibu.
What's your longest run that you've done?
Just for the shits and giggles, about 27 miles.
27, just for fun?
Well, no, it started out, I go up to the Hollywood sign, I turned around and I came out and I go, do I want to go to the zoo? I went to Burbank and I went down past Forest Lawn, went to Bob's Big Boy, and then ran back down Highland to get back, and it ended up being 27 miles. You know, I just kept going.
How'd you feel after that? Were you beat?
I felt good. I had to go to work in 2 hours after that.
Oh, God, yeah. That's next level right there.
It's just like with that, what George Southgate said yesterday. It's what your body can do. If your body can do, you keep going. But then when your body says stop, you got to stop sometimes. Not that I like stopping, but sometimes you really got to listen.
You got to know. You can't stop, but you got to know when your body's actually telling you this, when your body's telling you to stop and when your brain's telling you to stop. That's two different things too that I had to realize, because I was like, my brain's telling me to stop, but my body's still good, you know, that I'm just weak right now. But when, you know, your knees are actually locking up, or, you know, your ankle's getting stiff, or, you know, things like that, then it's like, okay, let me tone it down a little bit before I injure myself. Because like I said, I've had about every injury in the book, from torn ACL, meniscus, to broken ankle. I'm recovering on a broken toe right now. I've been through it all.
Well, it's like on Saturday, I realized I got to do more heat training because I haven't ran in the heat as much as I used to, so I'm not used to it anymore. I mean, I used to run in 100-degree weather, and I haven't done that for a while, and the half marathon was actually pretty heated, so I felt it towards the end, so I realized I got to, sometime in the next couple of weeks, got to start running in the heat, because some of these marathons that I'm doing are going to be in the heat.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to get my body used to it again.
Yeah, the heat, you know, I'm used to the heat. You know, South Carolina, we're used to like 95% humidity and just blazing heat. So I'm used to that, like, suffocating hot feeling. But I like the height, the elevation out here. That's one thing that I really like, you know, running 1,000 feet up and stuff. That's dope.
Oh, actually, Big Bear, so my body's going to be interested in that one. Doing Big Bear this year, that's going to be interesting because it's a totally different elevation, and you got to learn to breathe when you're there. So that's going to be wild.
How high is Big Bear? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know, but I know it's a different elevation that I'm probably going to have to get used to.
Yeah.
So I'm probably, you know. And it's probably going to have to, like, realize I'm not going to run as fast as I usually do. Because it's a totally different, you know, course and different elevation. Even the Bulldog run's probably going to be interesting because it's in the hills. It's 31 miles in trails. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now. It says the Big Bear Lake elevation is 6,752. So I'm pretty sure that counts as high elevation running right there. Anything above like 4,000 is high elevation. So yeah, you'll be up there.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm just gonna go run it and do it and see what happens. It's not like I can take a week off and go train in Big Bear.
Yeah, nah. You just gotta. That's the only way to figure it out is just by doing it, you know. And,
so are you planning register for any runs?
Yes and no. Like, I'm not planning right now, but in the near future, I will be. right now I'm just trying to get back into shape. Like, you know, this is – I've always been a runner, and I've always, like, you know, went in and out, took a hiatus from running for a while. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, I always jump back into it. But now I'm trying to get into, like, overall fitness outside of just running. Like, I'll always be a runner, but I want to be overall fit. I want to, you know, get my body fat percentage down to a maximum 10%. I want to get – you know, start targeting different areas outside of, like, just my legs and stuff like that. Start sculpting up. I don't want to, like, body build, but I want to, you know, just really get in touch with, like, my health and my body. And once I get the results that I want, I'll start, you know, getting a little bit more competitive and things like that. But right now I'm just on the track to getting back into it, you know?
Well, the funny thing about me is everybody thinks I'm bodybuilding, but the reason I get cut up is because I run. It's not because I'm trying to.
Well, you got a different body type, you know, because
running
for a lot of people, you know, it burns muscle too, especially if you, you know, you burn your fat, you burn your glycogen, and then you start burning that muscle. So the fact that you're retaining it that well is honestly, that's pretty impressive. You're not weight training or nothing like that?
Oh, no, I'm lifting every day. I mean, I lift about 45 minutes to an hour every day before I run.
Oh, okay. Oh, before you run?
I try to keep, people tell me I'm supposed to do it after, but I'm like, I like to do it first. But they say I'm doing it backwards, but it's working.
Whatever works for you. It seems to be working, like I said.
My thing about lifting is also, like, you know, percentages. You know, it's like, say a guy weighs 225 pounds and he benches 275, that doesn't impress me. It's only like, you know, 50 more pounds than you weigh. But if you say, if you weigh like 135 and you're benching 245, to me, that's impressive. You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're benching more than your body weight already, then that's impressive. You know, you're lifting more than your own mass, you know, that's dope. But,
Well,
no, I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I'm like, I think I'm 150. I feel like I could bench 220.
Well, yeah, I mean, before my hernia operation, I weighed 140 and I benched 245 like three times and I was happy. But since then, I kind of screwed up my shoulder, so I haven't been able to do that for like months.
Yeah.
I got my shoulder.
Yeah. Oh, also, yeah, I had shoulder surgery, too, so the weight training, I got to go slow on that now, too. I feel like I'm only 25, but, like, I've got injuries like an old man already, I swear.
Yeah, the only injuries I got was from drinking.
I tore the ligaments and the cartilage off of my left shoulder, and it was out of socket for like 3 hours, and I had to have surgery on it because the tendon stretched so much that whenever I got relaxed, it would just fall out of socket. So every morning I woke up, out of socket. You know, I was in school at the time, so, you know, you put your head on your desk for a second, out of socket. You raise your arm, out of socket. It was just like,
wow.
It was bad and painful. So I was like, I had to do the surgery. And now it's like I'm just scared on the weights to redo that injury. Doctor said, you know, if I do that same injury again, I won't be able to raise my left hand above my head.
That sounds kind of like I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I want that to happen. So I'm not a fearful person, but that one did strike a little fear in me because I was like, you know, I don't want any handicaps going on over here, you know? I've got full range of motion.
It's like when I feel like a shin splint coming on, like, should I stop? No, I don't want to stop, but if this thing gets really bad, I ain't going to be able to run. It's like, fuck. You know, I mean, that's my head when I'm running. I feel a little bit. Sometimes, I mean, I'm the idiot who doesn't drink water during a marathon. You know?
Nah, I hate water. Actually, I was just getting made fun of by some of my coworkers yesterday. I was hanging out with them at the beach, And they know I just don't like water. Like, I only like water when you're extremely thirsty. Water tastes like heaven.
Yeah.
I love that. Outside of that, no. though, like, I really have to force myself to drink water. And so, no, I definitely feel you on that.
No, it's just
definitely
during marathons, I can do a full marathon without water.
Oh,
people
same.
Are like, well, you're going to hurt yourself. I'm like, well, no, it kind of works for me. I mean, everybody has a different body type, and everybody reacts differently to things. And for me, it's like
yeah, everybody
no water.
My body retains you know, water pretty well, too. I'm going to be all right.
Yeah, but there's a good 5K coming up in September. It's Homeboy Industries, and that's, you know, that's just for me, the 5K is to see how fast I can go. I mean, that might be fun.
Yeah,
for
that's
you.
A shit. That's a hands down foot race right there. You know.
Yeah, yeah. 5K
thing
to me
is like
sprint.
Yeah, yeah, for real. I mean, I know it would be nice to get back to my high school 5K times. I don't think I'm there yet, but when I was in cross country, I was, you know, I think I hit a 1450.
Cool.
Then I was like averaging 15s. And I was like, I don't know if I could do that anymore. Well, I don't know, maybe. I probably could, but maybe not my first one. But
everything's training.
Huh?
Everything's
yeah,
just training, you know, maintaining. The thing, when I talked to George yesterday, the difference between running a marathon, running a 5K, and just training is when you're training, you don't have to beat anybody and you don't have to beat your own time. You're just training and keeping up. But it's a different headspace when you hit a marathon because you're trying to keep a time because you want your own personal time to be better. And the same thing with a 5K, you want to beat your time. It's not about beating everybody
mm-hmm.
else. It's about beating yourself. I mean, that's the way it
exactly.
works for me. Because, I mean, you really can't compete with everybody else.
You can't. I mean,
it's
a toxic mentality to, you know, constantly compare yourself to other people in this world, whether it's a race or anything in life, you know. Just something, it's not a healthy mindset to have, you know. You kind of got to stay in your own lane and just worry about, you
yeah.
know, your own self-improvement.
Yep.
I 100% agree on that, you know. Once I focus on my, that's why, like, when I run with my watch, it shows me, like, my trends. So
yep,
it knows,
yep.
like, you know, on average, like, you're usually running a 10-minute mile for 10 miles.
Yep.
But now you started out with a 9-minute, 30-second mile. Like, good job, Justin. I'm like, hell yeah. Like, that feeling of accomplishment of, like, racing myself is great.
Good thing I've learned from getting a watch that actually tells me the minutes is when I go uphill, I don't feel so bad because it takes more time going uphill. And I used to beat myself up thinking I'm lost time, but it's like you're climbed a hill, you idiot. You're going to lose time because you're going up a hill.
yeah, for sure,
But you still want to do it fast.
Too, yeah, downhill is ridiculous. Like, I think last time I ran, my last mile downhill was like, 4 minutes in. It was like 4 minutes.
I hate downhill. I'd rather go up than down.
You can definitely get some injuries. I was having little flash images of me just like busting my ass and falling face first down this canyon and stuff, you know. But hey, I made it. It became like more of like a parkour obstacle course, running fast downhill like that, you know. Like, you really gotta be careful. It's not running anymore. It's literally an obstacle course. You're like jumping from side to side, running down these stairs, skipping stairs, you know, rolling dirt, falling, you're sliding a little bit. It's like it turns extreme all of a sudden. So you turn the corner and you're back uphill and running like twice as slow.
Well, yeah. Well, it's been about a half hour. It's been great talking, you know. I'll be seeing you at work anyway, I think. Are you working today?
Yeah. I'm not working today, but
I'll
be there tomorrow.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow, and it's been great talking to you, and maybe in the future I'll see you at a marathon.
All right, maybe. But you have a good one, man.
You too. And this has been the Polar Runner Broadcast, and just so you know, let's see, I'm taking Bolt from 6 a.m. run. Also, if you do the code POET and get you 20% off. I recommend the 6 a.m. Bolt product because it actually, you know, gives me a little more of a boost when I run. Even if I'm sleepy, it'll keep me going. Also, I take Insane Labs ZMA for sleep and 28 days later and your nightmare. I recommend these things from Insane Lab. Thank you for listening to this podcast. See you next week where we have Brina Munez and we have the founder of Strides, which I'm going to love talking to her about, you know, running and recovery. Thank you for listening.